Doctors are well educated, so naturally they should be excellent when it comes to managing their own finances, right? Today, I'll also discuss why I think budgeting doesn't work and what you should be doing instead. My name is Dan. Welcome to the Passive Income Doctor podcast.
Just a reminder, this podcast is for entertainment purposes. Nothing here is financial advice. Please speak to your trusted professional advisors. Views expressed by podcast participants are solely their own.
Today, we will discuss money management, budgeting, credit cards, and what I think of them. Also, we will discuss compound growth. Does it make more sense to just save and invest when your income is higher in the future? Or should you start today? So in your initial thoughts may be, why on earth do doctors even need to budget? You know, won't the income just keep going up and up and we can worry about investing later? I guess it definitely does pay to improve your skills and earn a high income as we want to maximize our earnings per unit period of time. For example, if you're a consultant surgeon or an anaesthetist, you will be on a high income. So investing in education courses, traveling to relevant conferences can be seen as a wise investment if you can reach your goal of becoming a consultant sooner. However, that is only just one part of the equation. You still need to control your expenses. Lifestyle creep affects high-income professionals, including doctors. If you're earning $500,000 a year, but you're spending $500,000 a year, you're worse off than someone earning $250,000 a year who is saving $100,000 a year. I can understand the temptation to inflate your lifestyle. Often, you know, we worked really hard to get through medical school. You may want to reward yourself, you know, with a nice car, multiple overseas holidays, designer clothes, fine dining. I think it's okay to have nice experiences, but probably don't get into consumer debt to attain these things. In other words, you should spend within your means. There are a lot of horror stories out there of, you know, getting credit card just to cover a shortfall in expenses. But if left unchecked and you just pay the minimum balance on your credit card each month, your debt can spiral out of control and go higher and higher and higher, especially with interest accrued. With recent years, the rise of Afterpay and other buy now, pay later companies, this has compounded the problem further. Now, of course, Afterpay, you know, founders and shareholders were doing really, really well. But if you look up their share price graph before they were acquired, you can see there's an exponential rise and then a big decrease in the graph, partly due to increased government regulation, which, mind you, you know, I believe was overdue. So I think I've emphasized the importance of increasing income, but also the importance of reducing expenses. Now, I've heard of some financial planners out there that advise that new doctors in the intern year should just splurge and spend all their money and focus on savings and investments later to get it out of the system. However, I would say that that's setting you up for failure. You know, you want to establish the good habits from the outset. It's kind of like saying, go eat all the junk food you want today, and then you can start your diet tomorrow. And another point to add to this, you should take into account the power of compound growth. The earlier you start investing, the more time this allows investments to grow. Here's a statistic to illustrate. I'll attach a graph in the resources below if you wish to look at the graph. Let's compare two investors, Jack and Jill. Jack starts investing $200 a month when he's 25 years old. By age 65 years old, his portfolio is worth more than $520,000. Jill doesn't start investing until age 35. She also contributes this $200 per month, but by 65, her portfolio is only worth $245,000, which is less than half of Jack. Basically, by waiting 10 years to start, she ends up with much less. So I guess a lot of interns will say, you know, I'll wait until I'm a consultant to start investing as I'll be on a much higher income then. However, I would say that this could be a good, you know, 6 to 10 years away. And that's a long period of time in the investing world. You miss out on lots of capital growth. You miss out on building an asset base. And also you miss out on building good saving and investment habits from the beginning. You know, compared to, say, a tradie who starts working when they're 16, 17 and finish their apprenticeship, say, age 21, you know, doctors may not become consultants until their early to mid-30s. Now, let's discuss budgeting. And here's a controversial opinion. I don't particularly like budgets, and I don't think everyone needs one. The reason is that budgets look at the history, you know, what's already happened in the past. But unless you have a plan moving forward, there's no reason that next month you won't end up in the same situation. So you can say that the budget is good at looking at what expenses have been incurred, you know, looking at your fixed and your discretionary expenses, and you can identify leakage, areas that you could cut down on. Now, fixed expenses such as electricity, fuel, rent can, you know, reasonably be planned out. The main issue, I guess, is overspending on discretionary items, you know, such as holiday, you know, a new purchase of an iPhone, new shoes, and also, you know, eating out, takeaway, dining more than you had initially planned. I will say you don't need a strict budget. I personally don't. I know roughly how much net income is coming in each week and the rough amount allocated for groceries, eating out, electricity bills, transport expenses, etc. So, if budgeting doesn't work, what does? Having a money system. Now, there are a few different money systems proposed out there. One is a bucket strategy where you have an emergency fund, which might be living expenses of between 3 to 6 months. You might have an investment bucket and then a living expenses bucket and also a fund / discretionary bucket. You can also have more buckets where you allocate money, you know, such as for a short, medium-term goal, such as an overseas holiday, a new car. So obviously I didn't come up with this idea of the buckets. You know, I've read it in a few different places and it's described in some other podcasts also. One example is the Barefoot Investor, who's very famous. Scott Paik talks about having a blow bucket for daily expenses and the occasional splurge. And then secondly, a mojo bucket to provide a safety net or a buffer. And thirdly, a grow bucket where long-term wealth is grown. Another money system I've heard of is the 7-day float system, where you have paid directly coming into a savings account, which you don't have a card linked to, so it's harder for you to access. And then you transfer a set amount of that pay to allocate towards living expenses for 7 days. And the important thing is that you must stick to it. You know, for example, if by the 5th day of that 7 day or that week, you've used up, you know, all your funds or most of your funds, you need to have the discipline to not, you know, eat out when your friends might invite you on Friday night, for example. And you might have to make do with whatever's left and be creative with the small amount of money you have left until you reach the next 7 day. And of course, you may need to adjust the amount. You may overestimate or underestimate the money required for this 7-day float, but eventually you'll settle on a number. And if you can stick to that number, it really helps in the long term. I also know of budgeting apps that are out there, and there's so many, but I personally haven't used any. Let me know if you've used, you know, anyone in particular and recommend them. So really, there are many ways in terms of money system, but the important thing is that you have one, and importantly that you stick to it. Have one that makes sense for you. Now, a quick note about credit cards. I can see it works well for some people in certain circumstances. For example, you might have a mortgage on your own home and you might put all your living and discretionary expenses on the credit card for that month, while all your pay goes directly into your offset account against your principal place of residence, home loan. That way, you have more days where there is money in your offset account, saving you non-deductible interest. The important caveat is that you must pay off that credit card balance in full each month, so you don't incur the exorbitant credit card interest rate. Otherwise, this doesn't make sense. Another reason some people like credit cards is the reward points, you know, the frequent flyer points. I too have been, you know, tempted and thinking about it. But what stopped me so far is that I feel it might change my spending behavior. Even if we are smart money managers and tell ourselves that it won't change my behavior, I'm not too sure. You know, these companies are multi-billion dollar corporations for a reason. You know, I'm sure they have a team of psychologists and behavior experts that they consult, and are very profitable. Following on from this, I know there's also, you know, points hacks believers out there, you know, who believe in churning credit cards to get all the bonus, Qantas or Velocity, frequent flyer points, etc., etc. You know, one of the side effects is that there's lots of paperwork sent in to your mail, and you have to try and keep track of which card is open, which one you have to close to avoid the, you know, recurring fee. And another thing that you should bear in mind is that having many, many credit cards, it can affect your application, for example, when you apply for a home loan. So just bear that in mind. Also, it's quite hard to know how much these reward points is actually worth. You know, usually you need this astronomical amount of points to get a free flight. Some, you know, points hacking experts say that it depends on what you spend your points on. You know, apparently I've read somewhere that upgrading to business class is the most optimal use of points. But then again, some people find there's, you know, restrictions about these free upgrades, you know, when you can use it, what flight, or, you know, someone else has booked it and you can't do it. So just bear that in mind. And another side note is that if you know yourself that you're the type of spending personality that has issues with credit card or consumer debt in the past, it may be wiser altogether to avoid temptation and not have a credit card at all. Now to the mindset segment of the show, where I share a quote that made me stop and think. Today's mindset minute is, beware of little expenses. A small leak will sink a great ship. Benjamin Franklin. Now, I guess this little expenses, you know, can include small things like unused subscriptions, and you can reduce these expenses. You know, when was the last time you compared and got a better deal for your electricity or your car insurance premium or your personal insurance premium? And what about, you know, internet provider? You know, all these small amounts can add up, especially if it's a recurring monthly expense. The largest expense, though, for most people would be their mortgage repayment, but not many people periodically, you know, ring up the bank to ask for a better rate. You know, I've heard some other people refer to this as the lazy tax. Basically, we're paying extra because sometimes we're too lazy to give them a phone call or to look at some comparison websites. So, money management is important. A small leak will sink a great ship. Thanks for listening to today's show. Please take a moment now to hit the subscribe button and share the podcast, because this will help others benefit also. So until next time, keep taking steps to improve your financial health.